fish, fish, fishing. I've gone fishing, hook, sinker, and line.
You lucky little devils, you. Guess what time it is again? Yes, indeedy, it's radio fishing time. Radio fishing, dun, 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 on your dial. Yes, that's the way it goes. Okay. Aren't you? Come on, everybody.
That was exciting.
It's an exciting
day.
Yeah,
it was very exciting.
Yeah, you guys are, you know, Fish and Frank here in the chair, Robert in the chair across from me, and in the chaos control booth, it is RJ. A lot of talk today, going over a little bit of red tide. Robert, what's the red tide doing?
Basically, from Boca Grande to the Tom Adams Bridge in Inglewood, there's virtually none. There's a couple little tiny, tiny patches, but nothing inshore. The rest of it's offshore, 3 to 5 miles, and pushing out because of the direction of the wind lately. But once you get above the Tom Adams Bridge in the intercoastal, it's getting more patchy, but from Venice to Sarasota, it's real bad.
Okay, so Venice to Sarasota, we still have pretty bad red tides. But in Lemon Bay, possible little patches, spotty.
Yep. Very small patches.
Placida, Gasparilla, Placida. All clear and green right now.
All clear and green. And speaking of that, that just reminds me, Placida Pier potentially is opening this weekend. They're waiting for the engineer to give the okay on it. It's
so
done.
We might possibly have it.
Yep.
All right. Side effect of the red tide. Red tide is catastrophic. The world ends and no good comes of it. No, it's not
zombie
exactly
fish.
True. What?
Zombie fish.
Zombie fish, yes.
And you have to fish for them with brains.
Yes, you got to use brains to fish for them.
Nice.
Okay. All right.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's good. I like it. All right, here. A side effect of red tide is people don't understand, not everything is killed by red tide. Robert, what's a couple things that are not killed by red tide?
Shrimp and crabs.
Shrimp, crabs, clams, oysters,
yeah.
All those kind of things have, red tide has no ill effect on them, except makes them poisonous to human in the
correct.
Clams
and
poisonous
to birds.
Poisonous to birds.
The shore birds are eating the coquina now, and they're bringing in 30, 40 a week
to the
rescue places, and it's because they're eating the filter feeders, which are like clams and coquina and stuff like that.
That's the one way where humans usually will get sick and possibly worse from red tide is ingesting creatures that red tide does not kill. Small clams, the coquinas, like he's talking about, the little tiny clams, stuff that birds eat, they are full, high concentrations of red tide in their bodies, which does not have a bad effect on them, but anything eating them, an example, humans, birds, animals, anything like that that eats those shellfish will become very, very sick. Red tide ingested into the stomach internally is not a good thing. That's what usually kills the manatees. Manatees breathe very close to the surface, then they eat grass, and the grasses around there are full of the red tide. They ingest it into their system, and very, very bad. But on the other side, red tide actually kills a lot of other algae and bacteria.
Right.
So the water can actually be cleaner after a red tide event than it was preceding the red tide event.
Right. It overpowers it and takes the minerals and oxygen levels away from those other plants.
And bacteria
and
kills
stuff
them. Like that. It can actually kill several forms of bacteria.
Right.
Now, the other thing is, what's going on right now on the shoreline is a massive, massive amount of blue crabs.
All crabs, not just blue crabs. Calico crabs. Past crabs. There's several species of crabs mixed in with
every
them.
Every type of crab is out there right now enjoying the feast, along with shrimp. Shrimp eat fish. Shrimp will eat shrimp. They'll eat any. If a shrimp settles on top of something, it's going to try to eat it.
Yep.
Whatever it is. If it's a rock, a shrimp will try and eat it. You know, okay, I can't chew on this. So I guess I'll have to let that one go. But anything less than a rock, a shrimp is going to try and eat it.
Absolutely.
And if you ever look close at a shrimp, you look at the end of their little feet, they actually have claws at the end of their feet. There's pinchers there. And they eat the same way a crab does, by picking stuff apart and putting it in their mouth. So, and they'll eat plant, animal, mineral, vegetable, it doesn't matter. They eat everything. So the shrimp, the crabs of every species, if you go out to the islands right now, or the barrier islands, or the shoreline, or the beach on the Gulf of Mexico, look out in the water, chances are you're going to see thousands of crabs, thousands of shrimp, thousands of everything out there. It's right. Amazing.
Yeah, and at night you'll really notice it, but because a lot of those are nocturnal feeders, but because there's not as many predators around right now because they're just starting to move back in, it's amazing at the amount of crabs that are walking around during the daytime out there in a foot of water to 10 feet of water.
I mean, you just look in the bottom, you see all these little spots moving around.
Yeah.
That's animals out there trying to clean up nature's little janitor system.
Yep.
Not everything can be killed by the red tide, or everything would be gone.
And then the coolest part about that is the abundance of food and the lack of predators means you're going to have healthier animals that are going to produce more eggs, which will produce more offspring. So next year you have a larger crop of shrimp and crabs.
Yeah, we've seen this a lot over the years, because this was by no means even close to the worst red tide we've had.
No.
This was just our first social media red tide. And whatever social media does, network news, and it's hard to believe, at least 100 years ago, if not more than 100 years ago, Mark Twain said, if you don't pay attention to the media, you're uninformed. And if you do pay attention to the media, you're misinformed. And it was true then, and it is 10 times truer now. If I watch something on a network news at night, if they said, oh, it's a beautiful blue sky day out, I would first put on my rain jacket, then walk through the door to look. I mean, I just won't believe anything I see on TV anymore, or the internet for that matter.
Half of the information they're getting now, they're getting it from the internet.
Well,
it from the social media and then blowing it up from there.
Yeah.
And that's a result of a lot of the big media houses cutting back on employees. And so you got a guy sitting at a desk, instead of going out and digging up the news, he's reading Facebook.
And that's exactly the problem. Because when you go on whichever social media platform you like, there's so many of them, and the network news doing the same thing. Well, they want you to watch TV, so they make everything a little bit worse, a little bit more dramatic. It's, you got to see this. Tune in at 10. Tune in at 11. You're not going to believe how bad things are. And then people watch it, and then they go, oh, my gosh, look at that. So they repost it on social media, making it a little bit worse. You know, got to add a little dramatic flair of your own, and it just goes on from there. But tons of crabs out there cleaning up. This next year is going to be a great year on crabs, a lot of that stuff. Dropping a little bit of fishing here. Black drum, where is the black drum hitting right now?
They're actually still doing really well on the Punta Gorda Isle canals, 41 Bridge, the Port Charlotte canals, and then I've been hearing some pretty good reports at El Jobin the past couple of days. So with some bigger black drum, you know, those 25 to 50-pound fish.
Now, Robert and I made an effort to go out and find some larger frozen shrimp tails. These are bigger frozen shrimp. It costs the same per bag as you would if you bought regular frozen shrimp. But now when you go in the bin there, look for those big shrimp tails because they're excellent drum-baked.
Yes, they are.
I mean, you can put one of these on the hook. They're big enough, and you don't really want the live ones for the black drum. You want something that really stinks. The black drum has whiskers under its chin, and those whiskers, they smell and taste with. And it's kind of like catfish. Catfish uses whiskers to smell and taste. And they're looking for that dramatic stink in the water. That's what's going to attract that black drum very, very quickly.
And it also stays on the hook longer because of the little guys that are on. There's a lot of little baby mangrove snapper in the canals that'll sit there and beat up your bait. So having that on there, they peck at it, and that releases more scent in the water. But if it's a bigger bait, they can't take it as quickly. It gives that drum a chance to find it.
All you ships at sea, ships on the rocks, ships out at water, ships on lakes, people on land, people on boats, pay attention now if you will. We have big news breaking right here, right now. The state of Florida has just, and I mean just, decided that snook and redfish, you are not allowed to keep them. You are not allowed to keep a redfish. You are not allowed to keep a snook. Snook season is not opening September. This is news on the hour, by the minute, and by the second, right here at Radio Fishing. So, no snook season, no redfish season. They are catch and release only. I repeat, snook and redfish catch and release only until further notice, as of now. This is this minute, guys. This isn't tomorrow. This isn't next week. This is now.
It was an executive order sent out literally a couple hours ago. So it's done.
Yeah.
To which I say, holy ship.
Yeah, holy ship. I am telling you what.
And how are they going to get the word out to prevent people from saying, I didn't hear about it?
They don't. The problem with the state of Florida is religion is a wonderful thing. And I think, you know, if you're Hindu, Buddhist, Christian, Muslim, whatever you are, God bless you. I mean, you all do to the same one anyway. You know, you just want to do it differently. So this is a wonderful thing. But I'm really not sure the state of Florida should rely on religion so heavily. They believe in divine knowledge, that the supreme being of the universe will transmit this information to you. I am lucky enough to be on the inner circle. I have an angel that comes and in the form of an email that, you know, keeps me updated on this. But for as far as the rest of you folks, you know, literally, the city of Punta Gorda does it. Believe it or not, there is, if once you're over the 6-foot ledge mark, it's slow no wake around Punta Gorda. There's not a sign posting for it. And the one signs they do have posted for it look like they're for the canals. But they can actually give you a ticket for doing it. Now, the state of Florida relies so heavily on divine knowledge, you wouldn't even believe it. They actually have slow speed zones that are not marked, but you're just supposed to know that they're there. Yeah, you're looking at me like I'm making this up, RJ. I'm not.
I believe you. I've lived in Florida 30 years now, and I've discovered what you just said about divine knowledge. Yeah,
yeah,
that's how they get the word out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think, you know, praying is a wonderful thing. I think prayer does have power.
But
having our executive
now.
Officers and state leaders pray, tell God what they want everybody else to know, and expect God to tell us all that stuff, that's asking a lot from God. I think he's got more stuff to do.
I would think so.
Yeah. All right.
But practically now, this started today.
Today.
So if I go to the beach, let's say I wasn't on this show, I didn't listen to the show, and this is how we're going to tell who listens and who doesn't. If you got a ticket, it means you didn't listen to the show.
Right. So you just need to listen. I'm not always stupid. I actually sometimes get something right.
So I go to the beach now, and I catch a legal redfish, the right size, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I put him on my stringer, and I head up to the parking lot, and the officer spots me walking up, and he gives me a ticket.
That could happen, yeah.
So, well, it's certainly possible, because he's enforcing the law, and I'm sure that he's gotten divine knowledge. Somebody's told him, you know, as
actually,
of today.
Actually, don't expect that.
Oh,
a
okay.
lot of the officers will not know right away.
Wow.
I'm very good friends with a lot of the Marine Patrol officers, and I will say one thing. Their lead team, the management team there, I'm not always very respectful to, but 8 out of 10 of the rank and file FWC officers are some of the best ambassadors to Florida that we could ever wish for. They know the difference when somebody's trying to get away with something and ticket the heck out of them, you know, like, oh, I didn't know, but they really knew they couldn't have 6 snook. Mm. And they forgive people for mistakes on a regular basis. you know, no, you can't do that, guys. This is the way the law works, you know. And they're very informative. They're amazing ambassadors to our state. I am unbelievably proud of 8 out of 10 of the FWC officers I've ever met, and I'm very glad to have them representing us. The problem with it is they're not much more informed than we are. Again, the leadership at the top is not always what you would like it to be. I wish I could say different, but no, that's what I believe. All right, because snook and redfish are now catch and release, we are going to go around. What is a benefit of making something catch and release, Robert?
Theoretically, more fishermen.
So, theoretically, now, Robert, you're saying if we make a catch and release, there's possibly more people going to come to Florida to go fishing?
Correct.
All right. RJ, what do you think? Do you think making them catch and release will bring more people to Florida?
I don't know how that works. Why don't you explain it, Robert? How do I get more people to come to Florida if it's all catch and release?
Because they know they have a better chance of maybe catching it. This is just going on a theory based off of different...
Now, hang on just a minute. For your theory to work, how many years is that going to take to get more fish?
A long time.
2 years.
Yeah, at least.
At least 2 to 3 years.
Depending on weather and red tide and all that other garbage, yeah.
So,
absolutely.
What you're saying the possible benefit could be is more fishermen, but I'm going to say that's probably not going to be true, in my opinion, because it's going to take so long for there to be more fish that we're going to have a lot less fishermen in the meantime.
Yeah, how old is a snook when it's legal size?
About 2 years.
About 2 years.
2 to 3 years.
Two to three years.
Okay,
to 3 years old.
So if we started today, 3 to 4 years, because the first year you're going to be a while before you have any kind of effect on the population. So, yeah, you're looking at 3 years before anybody notices that there's more fish to catch.
I would say, Robert, what do you think?
I would say 3 to 5 years would be more realistic.
I'm going to say minimum of two.
Just accounting for Mother Nature's.
Yeah.
Minimum of 2 years, maybe 3 or 4. But a minimum of 2 years before we see an actual increase in numbers of fish.
Mm-hmm.
Because...
I can see where when you collapse a fish population, you know, and there's nothing to catch, people are not going to come. If they're coming to Florida to catch snook and redfish and the population is crashed because of freeze or red tide or overfishing or something, I'm not sure if that works in reverse. You come to Florida because you want to go fishing. Most of the guys you talk to on the beach and on the docks and on the boats and stuff that have come down here, they came down here, they want to go fishing. They haven't heard anything about not having any fish in the water. So more fish, less fish, probably doesn't impact, no fish certainly.
Now, I'm going to say normally I would agree with you, RJ, but I think you're wrong.
I've been wrong before.
And I think this
I think
is
it was 1982.
Partially true. Partially true this time. The problem is we've gotten calls from Arizona. I mean, virtually, I would say... at least from 30 of the 50 states, asking if there's anything left alive down here, should they even bother to come down?
Yeah.
I would say minimum of 30 of the 50 states, somebody has called and said, is there anything left alive in Florida? Are you guys okay?
Well, that's because we got a news event, right? But what if there was no news event?
Yeah, but we're still just speaking of this time.
Okay.
This closure. What could happen from this? I don't think that one of the benefits is going to be more fishermen. I'm going to go to the opposite end of it, and I'm going to say I think there's going to be less fishermen coming this year because they're going to think because they closed it, there's going to be no fish to catch.
Absolutely. I'll agree with that.
Yeah, that's my impression, too. I'm thinking, why did they suddenly shut it down immediately with an executive order? Rather than doing a study or, you know, all the other things that they normally do. And it's because somebody sees this as a huge crisis and there may not be enough fish around.
It's not a crisis. It's not a huge crisis. It's not a crisis at all. and I'll go into more of that later. But I'm thinking that probably, I would say at least, I would say 2 to 3 people out of 10, 20 to 30%, come to Florida, and they want to catch a redfish, and they want a redfish dinner.
Yes.
Yeah. And, I mean, I don't even think it's 50%. It might be 50%. But I'll get, let's say it's 50%. Who, I would say half the people that come down here, if they can't eat it, they don't want to go fishing for it. And I would say that might be half of the people who come down here, or half the people that go fishing are actually going fishing for the dinner. They're looking for a meal. They want the fun, the relaxation and all that, but they want to take something home. They want to complete the experience, and they're not going to be able to. So without having that dinner, I think we're going to lose probably, I would say, 20 to 30% of the people who would normally go fishing are not going to go fishing.
And that's our tourist population, our resident population. There's a lot of people that fish for protein. I mean, that's grocery shopping for a lot of people. And during snook season and during redfish season, they're out there because they can catch these fish and bring them back and put them in the freezer. And I think you're going to get a lot of those people saying, well, if it's catch and release, why do I even bother to go out, you know, to go fishing for that those species?
Yeah, and I'd probably say that the number's still going to be about the same, of about 20 to 30%. Because there's a big population out there that still just loves to enjoy catching the fish, but you do have more people target the snook during snook season, even though they are most of the time catch and release. It gives them the reason of, okay, I foul hooked that fish poorly, and hey, it's in season, it's the right slot, I'm going to take him home, or I'm going to keep that one fish for the season now because I want it, because it's good to eat, but that's where they stick with.
Well, I can tell you, West Virginia, and it might have been Virginia or West Virginia, but I think it was West Virginia, did a trial period, and they said, you know, if you foul hook a fish or gut hook a fish, you know, accidentally, you know, injure the fish, you can take that home and eat it so you don't waste it. And this went on, and during the first year, it was 90% of the fish caught were gut hooked, foul hooked. In some way, the person had to take them home, well over their normal limits of fish. So this one test case, because people could not self-regulate, is the reason that we have, if you gut hook or foul hook a fish and it's going to die, you have to put it back in the water. You cannot take it with you, because some people got greedy. Quite often we live on the sins of others. And it's just like this closure. This is the exact same thing that happened in the 19-teens, you know, when we had the bad hurricane in Lake Okeechobee. Bunch of people were running around going, oh my God, the world's ending. We've got to build a dike. We got to drain the Everglades. They drained the Everglades. They built the dike. They killed the Everglades. There's no more pelican or flamingos. There is no life in the Everglades. I've been down there in an airboat. You're lucky to see an egret once every mile. They did a study a while back where the alligators were eating snails to stay alive. They killed the Everglades. And they screwed up our coast and the East Coast by dumping all the water from Lake Okeechobee down it instead of letting it run to the Okeechobee. And this is going on in the 1920s. By 1939, they had it done, and we've been dealing with it ever since. And this, to me, is the exact same type of reaction. Oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. A bunch of people were running around screaming, and instead of doing stuff that would help, let's just close it all down. Now, that's my opinion. I don't know. You guys might have another opinion.
Well, we talked about the law of unintended consequences before on some of these other things, and this certainly plays into that. They made a decision Did they do any kind of study? Did they do any kind of analysis? Did they consult with other experts? What happens when you do this? What happens if you don't do this? I mean, do we take that many snook out of the water during snook season to have an impact? There's a whole bunch of questions you can ask, well, none of which I know the answer to, but
more,
somebody needs to ask the question.
This was more based on whining people.
Yeah,
this was based on election year.
Yeah, and that's really the wrong reasons to do it. And like you said,
well, sometimes it makes sense. I mean, I'm going to defend the FWC on this a little bit, not necessarily.
I don't think this had anything to do with FWC. I think this had to do with the governor's office.
Well, that still involves the FWC because every one of the commissioners that make all these rules for the FWC are hired by the governor himself.
Right.
So they're all scrambling for they're all scrambling for hopefully to keep their job in some way, shape, or another. So there's a lot of turmoil there, I'm sure. But the only time I've ever seen where the Game and Fish made an executive order without science, because it takes sometimes too long to get that science there, was when they made the ban statewide for all freshwater turtles, because they were exporting so many of them overseas to the Asian market. They just shut it down immediately because they had to, because a study to find out that population could take potentially years. So in some instances it makes sense. This one it doesn't. This one's strictly whining.
This one,
as far as I'm concerned.
I'm going to go with you on that too.
Now, I was a commercial fisherman. I worked on purse seines. I worked on longline boats. I worked on shore seines. I've thrown cast nets. I've done pretty much most of the commercial fishing you can do. And I know how many tons upon tons of fish a commercial boat brings in. Now, we see it during mullet season when there's just dead mullet everywhere. Literally, tens of thousands of pounds. I mean, we're talking 10 tons, 20 tons of mullet laying dead around over a course of a week. And, okay, yeah, that's bad. I'm not saying anything about that's good. But if you compare it to the numbers of fish that died during this recreation or during this red tide thing, I do not believe it was any more than maybe a few weeks' worth of a commercial fishing catch with the big boats. I mean, they literally bring in 5, 10, 20,000 pounds of fish a day.
Right.
A day.
Yeah.
There's all these fishing boats doing it. So I think the only reason this was closed down is because it's an election year and people on social media decided it was a big deal.
And it's the idea of, well, the governor needs to do something. Why isn't he doing something? So he issues an executive order declaring it's a disaster, a statewide disaster. It allows us to get interest-free loans if you've got a business on the beach that's being affected by it.
And then they own your business.
And then they own your business, right.
Read the fine print on an SBA loan.
Yep.
Trust me, boys and girls, if there's a hurricane or a disaster and an SBA or any of them want to give you a loan, read the contract.
Yeah, no, it's usually not a good idea. But anyway, so now you got the people yelling about all the fish dying and there's not going to be any fish left, so the governor's off. And I'm just theorizing here, but
all right. Now, one of the downsides to it, Robert, could the fish get smarter on a catch and release only system?
I think they can actually get a learned behavior to some extent. I mean, fish, you look at people with fish in ponds that are kind of their own pets. You see how they interact when they, as you walk to the shoreline, they know that you're getting.
If you're feeding them every day.
Yes.
If you walk out every day and you throw food in the water, after a while they hear your footsteps and come up waiting to be fed.
Sure. And so if you're out there catching fish and releasing them, I think that there is somewhat of some kind of learned behavior or retained knowledge there that can make them a little trickier to catch. I mean, look at a big snook. You can sit there and watch them in some of these places. You can sit there and throw it in a marina and throw bait after bait after bait at them, and they'll eat it the moment you put a hook in it, even with 6-pound fishing line, they ignore it. They just turn off. The catfish will eat it, but the snook won't touch it. Then you go back to throwing the bait back in one after the other without anything in it, they'll eat it. So there's definitely some retained knowledge there.
All right. RJ, retained knowledge or just coincidence?
Well, I think we're talking about natural selection here. If you eat something and it makes you sick and you survive, you're not going to eat it again. If you happen to die off, then there's nothing learned. So you catch a fish on a lure or on something that's a little different. You know, we make it different because you put a hook in it, like you said. The fish are going to learn. I mean, and I've seen that with other animals, too. We had a huge rattlesnake on the property for years and years and years, and you couldn't get near it because he got to be that big by avoiding humans. And so I think it's the same thing with fish. Catch him on something and let him go. He's not going to bite that again.
Well, I think if you want to train a snook to eat out of your hands, it takes about 3 months. Repetitive, every day. Go out at the same time and drop a little bit of food in the water. Usually like one sardine cut up into pieces. And after days or a week or two, you'll start seeing some go missing. And within a month, month and a half, he'll start hitting them on the way down. Within 3 months, that fish will actually be begging to be fed. And so just from my own personal experiences, I think it takes about 3 months. Now, if you interrupt that cycle, you're almost starting over again at that three-month period. They really need daily reinforcement of it. The goldfish in our... We have goldfish in our shiner tanks. They're illegal to sell. We're not selling them, but they're the canary in my coal mine. If shiners die and my goldfish live, my water's fine. The shiners were dead. I can back charge the shiner company to get some of my money back. If the goldfish die, well, I can't backcharge anybody because my water killed everything.
Right.
So, but with these goldfish in there, we feed them. And now if I tap my fingers on the side of the tank, I give it the, tap, 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 they'll come up neat. Now, if I don't do that for a week or two and I go to do it, they go to the other side of the tank. I put the food in. A couple days later, they kind of catch back onto it. So I think the problem is we think we are not doing it every day. I only go out once a week. I'm only out every once a month. I only fish every 2 or 3 months. How can they learn everything? But somebody else may be fishing that spot. So you've got somebody there 3 to 7 days a week catching and releasing in that spot. Other boats, other fishermen. And that could provide learned behavior.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so you got one snook, multiple teachers.
One snook, multiple teachers. I'll great like way to put it.
I like that. That's very good.
All right. Downsize, or one of the benefits, could be we could have larger fish. If we make them all catch and release, do we get bigger fish out of this?
With time, absolutely.
Really?
Sure. Why not?
I think you're absolutely wrong.
Really? Big surprise
now,
there.
Do you think that yes or no?
Oh, wow. I was going to go with Robert, but since you gave me advance warning.
All right. I'm going to give Robert half right on that.
Okay.
You get a 50% because snook live here. Redfish don't live here. It's impossible for us to get bigger redfish because the redfish get to be around high 20s, 30 inches, and they leave. They go to the Gulf of Mexico and become a pelagic fish. They only grow up here. So by us doing catch and release on redfish, A, it's doubtful we'll get more because they do leave. B, we're not going to get any bigger fish because, again, they leave. Now, with snook, that's where you get your little half gold star. You get, like, the 2.5 points on this one, because don't stars have 5 points?
Yeah.
Or six, five. Okay. So anyway, you only get two star points on this one, 2.5. Because snook actually live here year-round.
Right.
And they do not, until they get up well over 40 inches, then they kind of like go cruising. They like to become reef fish. When they get in that over 40 inches, then they'll cruise around. They seem to go north, south. They leave their normal haunts. And they want to go, I think it's like a retired couple who wants to buy a Winnebago and go see the country. But the little ones usually stay within about a mile of where they want to be. They pick a place, half a mile one side, half a mile the other, but they stay in that area. So snook, we could get more of and larger ones of. But if redfish leave when they get to be in the high 20s, low 30s, how do we get bigger or more? Okay,
maybe,
guys.
Maybe
you said that was going to work. So now explain it to me.
No. Okay. So you may not have more of them, but, well, yeah.
You're still, no, you may not have more of them,
no,
but, yeah.
No, no.
Come on.
You're going to have more, and you're going to have bigger fish. You're not going to have over-the-slot fish. Because those over-the-slot fish are going to leave. But you're still going to have more in the population because you're not taking them out of that population because they're closed for season. You're also going to have more numbers of larger fish because they're being allowed to grow up to make that size to become pelagic and future breeders. So instead of going out there and only catching the rat reds in January and then a few in May or whatever, you're going to have fish that are going to be of assorted sizes throughout the whole year until it's time for them to leave.
So you actually think it'll give us more fish? Okay.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
RJ?
Well, I'll go with the bigger fish because that, what Robert just said, made perfectly good sense. If you take a fish out of the population and eat him, he doesn't have the opportunity to get bigger. And if you keep putting them all back in the water, then you're going to get a larger population of fish that are bigger.
All right, but now in the case of redfish, redfish only grow up here. They go into the Gulf of Mexico. They could be in the Carolinas, Louisiana. They could be anywhere. And every once in a while, they'll come back here to spawn. But I don't actually believe it's every year. But let's say it is. They only come here once a year, October, November, and then they leave again.
Well, if more redfish are making it to the bigger sizes, to the slot size and beyond, then those are fish that have a potential to come back again. So maybe you end up with more breeders to come back.
All right.
So it's possible over time, yeah, we would see more fish.
Okay, unless they go to places like Louisiana and Carolinas that don't have size limit on them.
Right.
Different size limits.
Well, they have different size limits, but they still, you know. We make other states some nice big fish.
So the theory is the more fish that make it to slot size, the more fish you have to breed. And they, of course, will make more little redfish, and we'll see more fish in the water.
Okay. So if they make this catch and release for 6 months and say, okay, guys, you know, go ahead and go back and fish.
It's not going to change a thing.
Yeah, it's way too short of a period of time, 6 months.
Not going to change a thing to notice anything difference.
Other than to piss off a lot of people that like to go fishing.
It's going to wreck the economy big time. It's not going to make any lick of difference. It's not going to make a significant enough difference.
All right, well, here's one thing. Now, this is pretty far-fetched, and it's not my idea, but this is highly, highly improbable, but actually not impossible. If you let's say we did catch and release snook fishing, catch and release redfish, and the populations went absolutely crazy, could that cause a disease outbreak?
Absolutely.
Let's say we just got overrun with snook and redfish. There is 400 times the amount of snook and redfish we have now out there in the water. Could that make a potential for a disease factor?
Yeah, I think that's a natural mechanism. We see it with mammals like raccoons. Raccoon population gets too big. Distemper goes through the population, thins them out. I think we'll see the same
chronic
thing.
Chronic wasting disease in white-tailed deer?
That's right. That's right. As the population gets too large, nature has a way of...
We saw it, like you said, with catfish several years ago with the hardhead catfish in the harbor.
Yeah, we had a thing where
it was a virus that came out and literally destroyed all the hardhead catfish.
Yeah, there was a disease here, and it was pretty horrific because the stench was unbelievable. We had a big overpopulation of hardhead catfish, and tens of thousands of them died. and they were everywhere, and it stunk everywhere for it. I mean, there was more catfish died in that virus outbreak than all the fish died in this red tide. It was literally the craziest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive.
So, all right, now, I think we're kind of, for this first year, I don't believe we're going to get more fishermen. I believe we're going to get less.
No, absolutely.
In a few years, if they left this catch and release for the next 5 years or so, I think we could possibly see more and larger fish. But it would be at least 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
Minimum.
Minimum.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
The fish could get smarter and harder to catch, because if we start seeing a lot more fish, a lot more fishermen show up, a lot more people catching them and releasing them, the fish could actually get harder to catch. You might have to be a little sneakier, work a little harder. You wouldn't be able to do a lot of things you normally did. They could actually get harder to catch.
Yeah.
Okay. One thing, with them shutting down and you're not allowed to take a snook or redfish home, they are out of season as of now, catch and release only, is that going to put more pressure on other fish? Is sea trout, sand bream, spade fish, pompano,
mangrove snapper,
are black drum, are these fish going to suffer taking more losses because people cannot eat a snook or a redfish?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, if you want to enjoy fish, or you like to enjoy fish, or in some instances the people who just like to just take a lot more for their annual fish fry, yeah, if they don't have a couple redfish or snook to throw into that mix over a month's time of, say, fishing, they're going to whack other fish to make up the difference.
And I feel the same thing. A lot of guys fish for groceries. You know, they're out there fishing to bring fish home to the family. And if you can't bring a snook and a redfish home, then you're going to fish for others. You're going to target other species.
Yeah.
And they may be species that we just commonly don't target that often because we're after the more exotic fish, you know, the snook, the redfish.
Well, and it may not even be one that's more exotic and harder to fish for. It may be just as simple as, like, okay, one snook can feed me and my girlfriend for 2 nights or 3 nights. Mm. But that's just one fish. Versus I need 20 mangrove snapper to make that same time frame of meals.
Like, I keep 3 Spanish mackerel to have a meal where, with the wife and I, literally a snook is 2 nights.
Yeah.
So a snook is pretty heavy meal. We can get two to three meals out of it. Mm-hmm. For her and I, whereas with that would take 3, 6, 9 Spanish mackerel to do the same thing.
Absolutely.
Or let's say at least 6 Spanish mackerel to equal the dinner input minimal from that minimal snook. Same thing with mangrove snappers. I would say it's going to take at least, for one snook, you're going to have to do 6 to 8 mangrove snappers to get the same amount of meat.
Oh, at least.
So, it's great for the snook and redfish, but is it going to put undue harm?
Well, I think we're pointing back to that unintended consequences. There's a lot of stuff we don't know. I mean, the three of us are sitting here and using our best experience and saying this is what we think is going to happen.
Well, it's common sense science.
Yeah, but I think there's a lot of other factors out there that, and that's also scary. If the three of us are able to apply common sense science, what the hell went on in Tallahassee when they came up with this idea? I mean, did they use common sense?
It's about getting people elected.
Well, yeah, and that has nothing to do with common sense.
Most of the people don't live here in this state. And what they want to hear is people are doing something. I'm making a solution. It doesn't matter if it's a dumb one or a smart one.
Well, I'll give you another dumb one that we're seeing for the election. We have this problem in Venice where the treatment plant has been over capacity for a long time, and they've got an additional discharge permit that lets them throw so much untreated effluent out into the bay or into the water. And you can actually see it coming out of the pipe. I don't know how many drone films I've seen in the last week of that happening. Well, what did the city of Venice decide to do because only about 30% of the population is on septic? We're now going to put everybody on septic. Well, did anybody...
On septic or on sewer?
I mean, on sewer. We're going to put everybody on sewer. So...
But they're already overwhelmed.
We got a plant that's overwhelmed at 30%. What are we going to do at 100%? Did anybody think of that?
The problem with it is we've been looking for a source for the red tide north of Port Charlotte. And if this city is dumping raw poop, guys, this is number ones and number twos. And they're taking it from your private room in your house with your, you know, little white throne in it. It's going down a pipe and going directly into the bay. Yes. Think about that for a moment. All right. So it's going from your house right into the bay at 30% of the population. And now they're so overwhelmed, they're dumping raw. Why don't they just tell you, we're going to save you the money on the sewer pipe and just pump it into your ditch in the front yard, and as it rains, it'll wash down into the bay. I mean, it amounts to the same darn thing.
Pretty much.
And guess what, boys and girls? It's fertilizer. And it makes stuff grow. And I am not going to say that that city or township is responsible for this red tide and all the rest of that. I'm not going to say it.
Well, I'll use the word contribute. It contributes to the problem.
I'm not saying they're contributing or not contributing. You all out there in lovely Radio Land can think anything you want. You can think they contribute. You can think they didn't contribute. You can think they caused it. You can think they didn't cause it. That's up to you as an individual to make your own decisions.
But going back to the concept where there's all this knee-jerk politics going on, that's another good example of it. Why didn't they say, let's put the money that we would have to put into the infrastructure to put pipes all over the place, why don't we just put a better treatment plan in?
Bigger,
better, more efficient. I think the one that's in Venice, and I could be wrong about this, don't write to me and say I got the date wrong, but it comes from the 1940s that plant was put in. I don't know.
But even north of Fish and Franks in Charlotte Harbor, there used to be a sewage treatment plant there, right where the just north of Publix. There was a big sewage treatment plant right there, and they moved it because of the town was growing, and they decided to move it. I honestly am not sure where they moved it to, but I know they moved it out of town.
Sure, but just like let's say your 40s is whatever, even if it was built in 1980. What has the population done since 1980 in the Venice area?
And that's exactly what happened. The population got very large.
It still couldn't sustain. They weren't predicting.
The plant stayed the same size. Yeah. I mean, that's another common sense, logic, science.
And you got all more they want is $8,000 to $20,000 a house to put a piece of pipe in front of it.
That's right.
You know.
That's right.
Come on. Really?
Plus another $5,000 from a plumber to connect to it.
All right.
I wonder how many of the city commissioners are plumbers.
Their cousins are. They're
could
not.
Be very likely, yeah.
All right. A little bit of something.
Don't quote me on that, boys and girls.
A little bit of something for you here in the Northport area. Robert, there's a whole bunch of freshwater fishing going on right now, especially the area around Northport.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know if anyone's been paying attention the last
I don't know if anybody's still listening
days.
After this rant we just did, but hopefully you hung in there to get a fishing report. Go ahead.
The last 5 days have been some serious frog chokers for rain. I mean, it's come down a lot. I mean, there's been several days where I'd be really surprised if there was less than 3 inches that dumped within an hour or two in some of these places.
It's like the good old days.
Yeah. I mean, even though the ground was already saturated to begin with and all these spillways were already flowing a little bit, the amount of rainfall we've had just this past week has really dumped those spill dams, levees, culvert pipes, and even some of these swales and ditches are just dumping water over. I mean, the leaf lettuce that's flowing down the Myakka River, the Peace River, and all of the surrounding canals is pretty amazing. There's a lot of happy manatees up in the upper harbor right now with the amount of food that's coming down. But that's also turned on the Mayan cichlids, the tilapia, and the bass at every one of these spots. It's been really good. We got a lot of guys coming in and buying beetle spins, worms, both wigglers and night crawlers, and shiners, because they're catching such a diverse amount of fish out there and having a field day.
I can actually tell you, boys and girls, I've eaten Mayan cichlids and the tilapia. Awesome. Literally, you're going to love them. Go out, no size limit or bag limit. Just make sure they're big enough to fly. You know, I don't want to kill them for no reason, because they provide plenty of food for the bass. Our bass populations seem to be going up with the influx of the Mayan cichlids and tilapia, because they like to eat them. They've learned to eat the babies, and the bass are doing great off these invasive species. So make sure they're legal size. Don't kill to kill. Even though the state says you should, I think they're wrong. All right, let's see where we're at now. To the freshwater, but snook and redfish season, once again, is closed. And so it is catch and release only. And I think we've gone through, and I don't know of an upside to this, unless if they're going to keep it closed for 2 or 3 years, I can think it'll help. But if they're not going to close it for at least 2 to 3 years, I don't think we're going to see a benefit out of it. And I am 95% certain that it was not a major blow to the snook population. I've seen that freeze, which was supposedly devastating, but think of the scope of that freeze. That was from Tampa all the way down through the Everglades, all the way over the East Coast, up to Daytona. Snook died all over the state. Here we're talking about a few very small areas. None of Charlotte Harbor, not one snook in Charlotte Harbor died from red tide. Did not happen. None of the ones in the canals or anywhere up there. No snook died up by Tampa. There was not a large snook population kill compared to things like the freeze that we had. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, none of the snook in Mont Lachey died. They've had no dead. Mont Lachey's been red tide free and everything. So I'm just not sure this is going to be a good idea. But anyway, offshore fishing, Robert, give me some offshore stuff.
Offshore's been good about 10 to 20 miles out. That 3 to 5 miles out the last couple of days has been iffy, because there has been some small patches of red tide because of this breeze that we've had. It's pushed some of those patches offshore. But once you get from 10 miles to 20 miles out, mangrove snapper, lane snapper, grunts, porgies, getting some good reports of some really nice permit still. Cobia have started to perk up just a little bit for miscellaneous reports there. And then some bonita have been moving in closer, because there has been some different varieties of bait fish out there. Both Spanish sardines, thread fins, glass minnows, even some cigar minnows at some of those nearshore reefs, and just hanging out there. A lot of nutrients flowing out. So if you find that color change, that seems to be some of the hotter spots for some of those pelagic fish and bait.
Tarpon fishing.
Yeah, still good.
Thanks for the report, Robert.
They're frustrating.
We're good.
Yeah, that's it. They're good. Done. Next. No, the tarpon are still all over in all the holes out there. They're in the mouth of the Myakka all the way down to Cape Hayes. But they are being frustrating, because they disappear for a couple hours, and all of a sudden they show right back up to the same spot where you didn't see them an hour ago. And nobody's really sure what they're doing, but they're eating ladyfish, bait busters, and the storm swim baits are pretty much the three main things to be throwing at them.
We talked a lot about how many thousands upon thousands of crabs of all different types of species are out along the beaches. I was on my way up. I went up to Horse Creek in the boat the other day. And what was really weird, and I cannot figure it out, we talked to Jeff, I've talked to Robert about it, and from the 761 bridge to the Fort Ogden Trestle, there had to be 500 crab traps up there. Not above that or below that, just there. And I don't know why it would be. And the only thing I can think of is maybe the guy was storing his crab traps up there.
That would make sense to me. I mean, rather than hauling them down, because all the other crabbers have pulled theirs out from 75 on down.
Yeah, there's no other crab traps. From Harbor Heights all the way up to the 761 bridge, I did not see any crab traps. I get the other side of the bridge, and it's about a half a mile up to the Fort Ogden Trestle. And there was literally, I had to dodge the crab trap balls. There were so many of them. I cannot figure out for the life of me, unless maybe there's just crabs in that one little area.
Right.
But what would blue crabs be doing that far up the river?
Not this time of year. I couldn't see that.
You know, all right.
It's a little strange.
So anyway, this has been kind of a roundtable wonderment show about, really? We're not sure why all this has happened or not happened. But Fish and Frank here, voicing an unauthorized opinion. Robert in the chair across me, and again, an unauthorized opinion. And RJ, our control master, with the authoritative opinion that is pretty much unauthorized as well. So, good luck, guys. We'll talk to you next week.
I'm going fishing, hook, sinker, and line.